Good morning, everyone. It's Monday. It's August the 3rd. It is Mr. Tom Brady's birthday. Mr. Goat, greatest of all time, 43 years old. We're gonna celebrate that a little bit here today, and we're going to celebrate the jam-packed weekend of sports that we had, because there was a lot going on, both on the field and on the ice, or on the court, and whatever surface you want to talk about, and there's also things going off those surfaces. So we're not going to waste too much time, because we got a lot to talk about. We got a full hour and a half here, and we're going to use every single minute of it, except for, of course, for our commercial break. So without further ado, I got to bring in my co-host. He is Mr. Mike Debate. Mike, I heard a rumor that the jealousy over the Bobby Orr statue led you to remove the statue from Boston, because only you could have the most prestigious statue in New England, and you got to let me know if that's true. So first I want to say, and you're on the spot, my friend. Is that true?
La, la, la. And I wish to assert my Fifth Amendment privilege on grounds that that may incriminate me. So that's okay. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, it's a very, very odd story. Being
yeah,
a little
just
serious.
Very, very odd.
Being
serious for a minute, folks. Yeah,
just
an
a
odd
minute.
Story that statue would just, you know, disappear like that. But apparently there's very, very little information as to why or what happened. I'm sure we'll find out now. I mean, it's starting to circulate throughout social media. So if anybody has any information, we'd love to hear it. We'd love to break the news right here
exactly.
on NBC Radio Live. But it's great to be here with you on a Monday morning, my friend, and kick off another week as we continue to ride the roller coaster that is professional sports in the era of a pandemic, buddy.
Yeah, you know, look, real quick, like I said, I just saw the Bobby Orr thing this morning. Folks, I can almost guarantee you this is just probably a matter of just nothing. I mean, come on. But Bobby Orr is perhaps one of the nicest, most humble people, not just in sports, just in general, ever. You know, you would never think that he, you know, is arguably one of, if not the greatest hockey player of all time, but that's a discussion for another day. It was funny to see that happening, and of course, anytime I think of a statue, I think of my man Mike's statue being put up at Providence College. So it's, like I said, I hope your jealousy just didn't overtake you and overcome you and, you know, lead you to steal the statue. I hope that's not the case, Mike.
Well, you know, I will say this. I recently had to enlarge a couple of the walls in my house to fit a certain object. So at that point, it's you know, you can lead it to, you know, you can lead yourself to your own conclusions as to whether or not that statue is now in my living room. Not kidding. I'm absolutely kidding, and I completely agree with what my good friend had to say on the other end of the microphone. Bobby Orr is truly one of the national treasures when it comes to the world of professional sports.
You know,
and
I met
course,
him once.
The world
I met him once. I was
you
a kid.
Did tell me.
Yes.
Yes. Please,
yeah.
Please,
I went to.
Please regale our listeners.
I will.
This is a great
I will.
Story, folks.
I will. Because, you know, HQ home headquarters. Anyone who knows it is, you know, I think they went out of business years ago. So I'm pretty sure they don't exist. But, you know, being from New England, I'm sure you remember the store from, you know, 20 some odd years ago. Actually, this had to have been 25 years ago. Now that I think about it, because I happen to be going to it. And folks, if you're familiar with the Framingham and Natick area in Massachusetts, Route 9, you know now where the IMAX theater is, and I believe it is Jordan's Furniture still. Funny story, that's where I used to hang out, you know, at night in high school. That was our hangout spot. Yeah, in the parking lot, not like Jordan's Furniture. It's not like we're going around and saying, ooh, that's a nice arrangement. no, we were being teenagers in the back of a parking lot. Let's just put it that way. But anyways, I digress. We went to HQ and he was signing autographs, and the only thing I had was my Cooper goalie stick. So I got that signed from him. And again, you know, this is just mid-90s. I'm just guessing here, but that's about when I feel like it was there. But folks, there you go. HQ, home headquarters, Jordan's Furniture, that whole spiel. But anyways, there's a lot going on. Obviously, we want to talk Tom Brady because, well, that's what we do every episode pretty much at some point. I mean, it makes sense in a way because, again, he's usually a topic of conversation because, well, he is the NFL. Also, we're going to talk some hockey with Kyle Senra. He's going to join us for about 25 minutes after the first break and recap what was a pretty awesome weekend, you know, save for the fact that the Bruins kind of got, you know, dominated on the ice. Other than that, it was, I mean, we really got everything this weekend in the first 2 days of the NHL playoffs, or Stanley Cup playoffs. And of course, there's other news around the NFL, including a somewhat, a bit of a solution. I'm not going to say final, I'm definitely not going to say that. Jesus.
Be careful. The word final when it comes to professional sports right now.
Yes.
It is a fluid situation out there.
Yes. Fluid is, that's a good phrase, but there's no permanent solution to the Antonio Brown situation. However, there is more of a idea of what's happening. So we have that going on. We have a coach that has tested positive. But you know what? Let's start positive right off the bat. We're going to talk Tom Brady because, again, it is his 43rd birthday. It's a little bit bittersweet, though, my friend, because, you know, it's the first time we're celebrating this birthday. And he's not running out to cheers at training camp in New England. And look, I've accepted that he's moved on. That does not bother me anymore. You know, there's moments where you kind of get those few seconds of like, oh man. But you know, hey, for the most part, you've accepted it. And I said it, I think last week, if there was any season in which he was gonna go and play for another team and leave New England, it might as well be this season that is completely upside down and you know, turned all around because of, you know, what's going on in the world. So, you know, again, it is bittersweet, but we're still going to celebrate nonetheless, because this is a guy who at age 43 will become just the fourth quarterback to ever start a game at that age. And, the other three, I believe, collectively have 3 wins. So I'd imagine he's going to absolutely crush every single one of those, metrics for age 43, just as he's done for 42, 41, etc., etc. I mean, every one of those standards have been completely blown out of the water. When you look at these stats, you're going to see Tom Brady, and then you're going to see a bunch of blah. Now, maybe you'll see Drew Brees in there, but that remains to be seen. We'll see what happens this year. But I got to ask you, because I saw it on SportsCenter or GetUp or whatever the hell it's called nowadays. You know, they were talking about their favorite Tom Brady moment. So I'm going to ask you, Mike, can you narrow down a moment or two that is your favorite from Tom Brady in his 43 years? Granted, we're focusing more on the last 20 years, but, you know, hey, you never
exactly.
know.
Well, it's going to surprise most people, probably, because my favorite Tom Brady moment is actually not one that involves his heroics on the field. Well, sort of it does, but it really doesn't. Post-Super Bowl 51... Tom Brady, I'll remember this always, going over and giving a warm embrace to his mother, Galen, who had been fighting cancer throughout the entire year. It was a tumultuous season, an up and down season for Tom and everything that had just happened. And that was the moment where it wasn't about what happened on the field. It wasn't about anything else. It was about him being able to win this one for his mom. Anybody that's seen the highlights of that knows that Julian Edelman, you know, kind of prodded him on the sidelines and said, you know, buddy, we're going to do this. We're going to win this one for your mom. And you could just see the overwhelming emotion on Tom Brady's face. Mm-hmm. And anybody that has any type of ill feeling toward him, I dare you to watch that video and still tell me that you feel that he's a less than honorable guy, that he is someone that does not deserve praise and accolades. If you do, then you're exposing yourself as a fraud, because at that point, you're only basing this off of your dislike for the man's success. To me, that's my favorite Tom Brady moment. I mean, you look at moments on the field, I guess, is probably what you were looking for. So, yeah, I can definitely give you a couple of those. I'll go with that winning drive in Super Bowl 36, the drive to me that started it all, where John Madden's up in the booth going, no, you got to kneel down, you got to do this. I mean, for all of the credit that Adam Vinatieri gets, for kicking the field goal, and he deserves a lot of the credit for that, folks. I'm not saying that. I mean, that's a very tough kick, very tough, you know, situation, and no one holds Adam in higher regard than I do. I think he's one of the more indelible pieces of that early days Patriots dynasty. But you don't get there without Tom Brady leading you down the field, and I don't care what the passes are. I don't care what the situation was, play calling, whatnot. You have to execute it on the field. That drive told me all I will ever need to know about Tom Brady. When you need a score, when you need something to happen, he's going to do it. He's going to lead you down that field, and he's going to make sure that he puts you in a position to win. Now, whether or not that's always going to work out, I mean, there have been times where it hasn't worked out for Tom. There have been times where he's done his job, and other circumstances prevent the team from being able to win Super Bowl, you know, whatever it is. Well, that'll remain nameless. David Tyree. Oh, God. You know. But yeah.
The ones that end in two, I don't like to talk about too often. 42 and 52.
Yeah. Yeah, that never happened, you know, so we're not going to go there. And but no, all kidding aside, I think those two probably, if I'm ascending those to the top, again, my favorite Tom Brady moment is the moment that he shared with his mom and his family. You could see, you know, him there with his children, with his wife, Giselle. This was a family moment for them. It was probably one of the greatest, if not the greatest comeback in professional sports history. And at that moment, it wasn't about that for Tom, and you could tell that. It was about being there with his complete family by his side, where maybe just a few months earlier, he wasn't ever sure that was ever going to happen again. She was there for him, and he wanted to, you know, perform and show his gratitude. So to me, that's always going to be the indelible moment of Tom Brady for me, man.
Well, and you know, that's something, too, and you can kind of package that moment up with the entire situation, the entire weight of that season, not only obviously with his mother, but you know, the suspension, the, you know, just how good and how great he was in those 12 games that he played, and then of course the lead up into the Super Bowl and the Super Bowl itself. I mean, it was you know, Super Bowl Seahawks I'm completely blanking. Super Bowl 49 was that was there was a lot of emotion that went into that one. Obviously, the drought, the tying Joe Montana for the four titles, you know, just kind of elevating finally himself up and above those giant Super Bowls, and you know, and just obviously the nature in which he came back and the performance, all that stuff was great. Super Bowl 51 was icing on the cake, but it wasn't easy. You know, this was, you know, you bought the icing and the package ripped, and you had to get a knife to kind of cut it open, and then it wasn't like quite squeezing out properly, so you had to, you know, adjust, and then so there were so many things. It wasn't easy icing on the cake, but when it was all said and done, it was as perfect of a way to elevate you to a level above everyone else. And then that really, you know, obviously I can sit here and say that he was the greatest after Super Bowl 49. To me, there's absolutely no doubt after Super Bowl 51. And when you go back to that moment and you think about everything that that happened, you know, if he would have retired, then he would have been the greatest of all time. And by a wide margin. He only has continued to play and went to another Super Bowl and won another one after that. So, to me, that obviously I agree with you in with that moment. When it comes to individual plays, I mean, there's just so many to choose from. You know, it's easy to go and look at Super Bowl 36 as that, you know, defining moment and everything like that. But you know, when it comes to just the things that I'll probably miss is, you know, the first time when the season kicks off and you don't see him run out the tunnel and do his, you know, let's go. You know, that I think is gonna get you a little bit. You know, you'll see it down. He'll do it down here in Tampa. I mean, he's gonna be the same guy down here in Tampa, and you know, you'll enjoy that if you're a Brady fan. But you know, obviously as a Patriots fan, that's gonna be one of those ones where like that's gonna sting a little bit more than I feel some of these other things have so far during this offseason. But anyways. Tom Brady, happy birthday, 43. Let's hope you have another 20 years of football left in you, because I'll sign me up for that. Anyways, we talked about some sort of solution for the Antonio Brown situation, and I'm not going to say, you know, things can obviously change, but the NFL issued a 8-game suspension to the receiver. So there is some just idea of what the process is going to be to get him on the field if you're a team that's interested in signing him. There's no longer this looming threat of him being put on the exempt list and just being basically shunned from the league for the entire season. Now, again, more information and circumstances could arise that could lead eventually lead to that. But right now, based on what we know and based on what has been, you know, the facts of the matter for several months now, this is what Antonio Brown's facing, an 8-game suspension. So that leads me to believe, once again, that now teams are going to look at it a little bit differently. I can't imagine if things stay like they are now that he doesn't find himself on an NFL team at some point this year. You know, I've said it so many times to exhaustion that the talent alone will justify and convince some team to take a chance on him. Now, add in the fact that you have players opting out. You have, you know, potential health risks that could land players off the, you know, get players off the field for a few weeks or an entire season. You know, something that isn't a normal occurrence in every NFL season, but would be this year. That could open up doors. And look, how long can coaches sit around and GM sit around and say, you know what, we have a Hall of Fame wide receiver, still relatively young, just sitting there, available at, I would imagine, a very low cost, because there's not a team in the world, and I even think Antonio Brown realizes this, that there's not going to be a team out there that's going to give him any sort of lucrative deal. This is going to be you're going to go out, you're going to get a low base salary, maybe a decent signing bonus, but it's going to be very heavily incentivized. And look, I think Antonio Brown realizes this. He has to realize it, because of what's happened before. So to me, absolutely no doubt in my mind that eventually a team will take a chance. This ruling may even, you know, accelerate that, because now teams aren't dealing with, you know, as many questions as they would have just a few days ago.
Without question, I completely agree with you. Look, bottom line is Antonio Brown right now has a little more leverage than he did a few weeks ago in terms of negotiating a deal. And I know that's going to sound strange, folks, but like Ian said, the fact that now we know that there is an 8-game suspension attached to whatever team he's going to sign with, attached to whatever contract he signs, does provide a little more closure for teams when they're looking to bring him in. They know now what to expect. And again, there's always the chance that things could be added to that if negotiations, or I shouldn't say negotiations, but if investigations uncover anything, you know, else or whatnot. Mm-hmm. You know, the league always has the right to step in and do that. But with this ruling, I think right now, at least for the season, teams know what they're going to be getting with AB. So I agree with you. I think there will be a team that takes a shot on him, depending on the type of environment that he's in, depending on the supporting cast that he's playing with. He can still be productive. I mean, he proved that last year when he came in to New England and performed fairly well after being relatively rusty. Now, don't forget, folks, he's been on the shelf now for almost an entire year. In early September, it will be 1 year since Antonio Brown has stepped foot on an NFL football field for meaningful competition. I know he had that cup of coffee workout down in New Orleans, but that was pretty much it. And at this point, you need to understand that there's going to be some rust. There's going to be, a difficult acclimation to getting used to some of these systems. So it'll be interesting to see which teams are willing to take that bite. Naturally, Seattle keeps being the team that is rumored and bandied about most prominently. We saw Lamar Jackson last week praise Antonio Brown and basically clamor. It looked like he was clamoring for the Baltimore Ravens to sign him. So you know the Ravens are going to be in the mix. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people are not going to buy into the Buccaneers being possibly interested. I think there's a slim chance of that. But as long as Tom Brady is there, there's always that puncher's shot that it could be an option. People are going to continue to chirp about the New England Patriots as well. And listen, bottom line, folks, I don't believe there's much of a chance of that happening. But Bill Belichick is always going to do what's best for the football team. If they can get assurances that this would be the best possible fit, depending on what the Patriots need, and I think they have more need at tight end right now, maybe even more of a need at some of the defensive positions, but you bring in a player with the caliber of Antonio Brown, all of a sudden you have to consider it. Now that teams know what they're up against, yeah, I think you may see a team bite. And I agree with you. I think it's going to accelerate it. I don't think this is going to drag out. You may see him sign a contract before the end of training camp.
Yeah, and again, that's the thing. He can participate in training camp. It's basically his suspension starts the day the league year starts. So early September, he would have to go away for 8 weeks. Now, again, that yeah, it's like, okay, well, what, you know, eight weeks, you're not going to have. Well, at least you know it's not going to be the season, at least as of right now. So again, that leads me to believe that some team, and excuse me, you've already mentioned it, you know, the Patriots, the Buccaneers, the Ravens, and the Seahawks have been the four most, you know, prominent names. Now, again, there's, I'm sure, varying levels of interest from each of those teams. You know, I do think, especially considering some of the other losses the Patriots have suffered over the last week or so, that defensive help would probably be the priority. But look, I'm not going to rule anything out. Same with the Buccaneers, especially since they seem to be signing everyone. So at this point, you know, it wouldn't surprise me. You know, they would have to get creative, and it would certainly be, like, again, this is a situation that unique to many other seasons. But like you said, as long as Tom Brady's there, I mean, he's one of those guys that, you know, there's a few. Lamar Jackson, you know, obviously Russell Wilson has been a very pro Antonio Brown, and obviously Tom Brady. So as long as those guys are involved, I think they have a lot of say within their organization. Not that, you know, teams are going to do everything they say, but even if your instinct says, well, no, we don't want to sign him, but Tom insists, maybe you reconsider and you think about it. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. You know, I think once we get into practices, which are set to begin for a lot of teams in about 10, 11 days or so, you know, middle of August, when normally we'd be in full preseason swing. But, you know, This is where we are now. This is how, you know, we're dealing with this offseason. So in a couple weeks, we'll kind of see. We'll see what happens. Obviously, injuries occur. That changes teams' mentalities. But at the end of the day, this is a guy who will get into the Hall of Fame when he's eligible, regardless of his off the field or in the locker room antics that may or may not rub people the wrong way. His on the field performance screams Hall of Famer and is deserving of Hall of Fame status. So again, some team's going to take a chance on him because he's only 31 years old. So, you know, with that being said, we're going to take a break here because when we come back, we're going to talk some hockey with Kyle Senra because, again, we had so much going on this weekend. I mean, I'm still a bit hungover. If you can't tell, my voice, my just thought process, it's all mush right now. It really is. The other night, I went to bed an hour before I normally get up every day. That's how screwed up my weekend was. So to give you an idea, and you know, I ate like 5 ice cream sandwiches on Saturday, so I was a little out of sorts, let's just put it that way. But nope, folks, hang tight. We're gonna be back in about 5 minutes, and we're gonna talk some hockey. So yeah, go get a drink, relax, and we'll be right back. All right, folks, we're back. I love it. I say it every time, but I'm telling you, I love this song. I love it. It brings back great memories. But nope. But as you can see, folks, we got Kyle on the screen here with us. I wanted to fade that out a little bit, but whatever. We'll get it on the next break. We got Kyle here. We're going to talk some hockey because we had a lot going on this weekend. If you were tuning in over the weekend, or yesterday morning, rather, Kyle and I, as well as two of our other FPC NHL coverage writers, covered some of the games from Saturday. We previewed some of the games that happened yesterday. We had a lot of fun over at the Full Press NHL account here on Sportscaster. So if you're not following it, go check it out. Give it a follow because we're going to obviously keep using it, especially throughout the playoffs, because if we get games like we did over this weekend throughout this entire playoff run, this is going to be the most incredible 2 months of my life. It'll be exhausting, and I'm probably going to die of exhaustion by the end of it, but It was great. So, Kyle, we're going to jump right into it because, you know what, I'm going to start here at the 0.01 finish, because this was obviously not a qualifying round series game. This was one of several play-in games that we, or not play-in games, round-robin games that we got to see yesterday. We're not going to talk too much about the Bruins and Flyers. That was, whatever. But we saw the Colorado Avalanche with the closest, the most down-to-the-wire finish to win a game. I clearly anyone's ever seen, because you can't get any closer than what you were with this. It was 0.01 seconds. It was to it was incredible. It was a great finish to a great hockey game. What were your thoughts on that, Kyle? And how are you?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. I watched this weekend. I mean, there were what, 11 games this weekend, I think.
I think so. I'll check my box of ice cream sandwiches and I'll let you know how many are missing, and I'll tell you how many games that were played.
If I'm correct that it's 11, I watched at least part of 10 of those games.
Yep.
The only one being the Blues Avalanche game. I was actually in the an auction draft last night for fantasy football. It's not hockey talk. Bring the football talk. And that went from 7 till after 10. So like I missed the entirety of that Blues game. I caught the third period of the Leafs game. So what I've seen from the highlights, I mean, it looked like Bennington. I mean, I remember Kayla had messaged me during the draft. I was chatting with her just to share results a little bit. Alessandro's in that one, too. It's his contract initiation. And I actually thought he did pretty well. But digressing on that, she mentioned how Bennington was playing really well, and he almost had a shutout going. Mm-hmm. You know, late into that third, he had a shutout going, and then the Avalanche, two goals in the third to take victory away from, again, the defending champs. For anyone who listened yesterday, I made kind of my early prediction of, I think the two finalists last year are my two favorites. And yes, Boston did play pretty bad yesterday. Apparently, they played pretty poorly in the exhibition game as well. I don't necessarily put as much weight into that. I put more weight into this game, though, because this is, you know, you not, again, the round robins don't necessarily mean anything other than seeding, but we'll talk about one team in particular later. And I think that team, especially if Montreal pulls the upset, that team suddenly makes it so you don't want to finish last in the round robin, I don't think. So there is incentive still.
Yeah, look, I mean, I tweeted this yesterday because obviously there was panic amongst Bruins fans and everything like that. And look, I there's part of me that enjoyed it because, you know what, that tells me sports are really back, is when I see overreaction and end of the world type tweets off of this game, which honestly, would I have liked them to play better? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was parts of the game where it was just like, okay, whatever, Tuukka wasn't in there. I mean, some of the shots that went in on Halak, the last goal, the fourth goal, that was bad. He was off his ankle. They even brought it up on the broadcast. I saw it as soon as that play started to develop. I'm like, oh, look, Halak's not on his ankle. That puck's going in, especially the way the Flyers were shooting. I mean, they were just picking every top corner. I mean, some of those shots were just, you just pray, you throw your glove up and pray that you can catch up to it. So I'm not sitting here saying doom and gloom for the Bruins. I still think that they're the best team in the East. And this is a team that, you know, look, they can go out and play Tampa tomorrow and look like world beaters. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, they're the Bruins. I'm not worried. We're good, because they have that veteran presence. So I'm not too worried about it. Just like, you know, if you're a Blues fan, you're not worried about losing the first game. I mean, it is what it is. So are you going to lose seeding? Is that going to hurt? Yeah, maybe. But the point was brought up during our discussion yesterday on the Full Press NHL show. If you're the Bruins, you're feeling confident against any team in the East. Now, again, you might be haunted by a potential matchup with the Canadiens, but at the end of the day, the Bruins are a much better team than the Montreal Canadiens. And if you're going to talk about a seven-game series, well, give me the Boston Bruins in that series. This isn't 2002 Boston versus Montreal. This isn't 2004 Boston versus Montreal. This, you know, the Bruins are a battle-tested team with a lot of playoff experience, a lot of Stanley Cup final experience. So this type of performance in a game that, you know, yes, it means something, but ultimately doesn't bother me. I was, you know, there's one thing that got confirmed to me yesterday, and that is I was completely wrong in choosing the Toronto Maple Leafs to win their series. They may get swept. out of the building. Now that's a team I'd be concerned with if I was a fan of that team and after that one game, because I wonder if this was this the team you were alluding to, the Columbus Blue Jackets, as being that potential thorn in the side of a lot of these top teams if they advance past Toronto, because they're showing right now kind of what you talked about yesterday and what we kind of collectively talked about yesterday, is they can shut down a Toronto team. If Toronto doesn't score, well, guess what? They got nothing else to go for. So this could be a very quick series.
I will say, watching the third period, Toronto looked a lot better than some other teams did this weekend, I will say. Mm-hmm. So I'm not as concerned. It just seems that, you know, it was a 2-0 game. I mean, both goalies were on point. You're going to run into games like that where, again, I don't know how they played through the first two periods, but at least in the third period, it looked like they were producing chances. Like, you could still tell Columbus, at least yesterday in that third period, was the better team, but it wasn't say Carolina to New York,
for instance.
Then, which is, I'll spoil it now. The Hurricanes are that team I was alluding to, actually. They've young team, but they gained a lot of playoff experience last year, getting to the third round. Losing to an incredible Boston team that went to Game 7 of the finals, so there's no shame in that. Certainly, I mean, they played a great series. Well, all three series they played throughout.
Sebastian Aho might be the biggest superstar that no one knows about. So, I mean, that's a kid who can really, make a difference. So,
and I mean, I think Rod Brind'Amour is an incredible coach. He's coached that team up to be so defensively sound, and their penalty kill. Mm-hmm. I think the Rangers were 0-9 on the power play or something like that. Like it was, you know, they shut them down completely. And so I think the Hurricanes, their forecheck, especially right off the bat, anytime the puck was in the Rangers zone, there were 2-3 Hurricanes players all over it. The Rangers had no space to operate. When they'd get in the offensive zone, they weren't able to sustain as easily. They could still find ways, but it seemed really the Rangers had a hard time getting out of their own defensive zone. And it showed.
Well, and to be fair, I mean, the Rangers versus, you know, the Bruins or the Flyers or any of these top teams in the East, there's a big difference in talent and ability. And I mean, so of course Carolina is going to have an easier time with the Rangers, but I'm not taking anything away from Carolina. They just looked really good. I mean, you can win just because you're playing a bad team, and you can tell, like, okay, you didn't look great, but, you know, talent kind of, you know, outweighs, you know, some of your flaws. But in this case, Carolina was just that much better, and it showed. So yeah, I like Carolina a lot. I want to see how it plays out and see how much of a, maybe I wouldn't put them at the top of the list in terms of biggest threats to one of these bigger teams. But I'm going to ask you, Mike, because I want to make sure that you're still alive. Okay. I don't know how many of the games that you caught, but from a perspective of just visual appeal, how do you think, because I happen to like the production that they put on. I saw some people complaining, but really it was about the product on the ice, and I thought that was great. But overall, I think the production was great. The arena setup was great. How was it from your eyes, Mike, in terms of visual appearance and just how, I guess, close to normal was it?
I think it was very aesthetically pleasing. I mean, when you look at what the NHL had to do, when you look at really all of these sports and what they have to do to try to make things look as natural as possible when you're dealing with empty arenas, empty stadiums, things of that nature, it's not easy. It really and truly is not. And especially the challenge for a league like the NHL or even the NBA, where you're playing in bubble cities, it's a challenge to make that look like a home environment, to make it look like an environment where teams are comfortable playing. I thought they did a fine job. I thought the product on the ice was pretty good, considering the amount of time that we've missed when it comes to hockey. Yeah, the Bruins, naturally, those are the games that I caught. Those are the games that had my sharp eye this weekend. And, naturally, the outcome wasn't so great. But all in all, I wasn't really concerned. I think there are signs of promise there. I think there's, you know, a lot to be learned within the next few days as to how these teams are going to shake out. You love to say it's early, don't worry. There is an accelerated schedule now. Obviously, the Bruins are in as one of those top seeds. We talked about this a little bit last week, but how are they going to be seeded in? What's going to happen? And I think a lot of teams are coming out right now that are healthy. They're motivated to play. Maybe they have a little bit more to prove than some of the teams that have already proved their worth as well. But from an aesthetic standpoint, I agree with you guys. I thought it looked good. I thought that the NHL is doing a fairly good job. And we talked about this even months ago when the plans were put in place to come back, that the NHL seemed to be ahead of the curve. I think they did a fairly good job this weekend. And it's just great to see hockey back, because a lot of people that I saw talking about hockey, and you alluded to this just a few moments ago, it was good to see people complaining about stuff that was happening on the ice. They weren't distracted by the outside elements. They weren't distracted by the new set, so to speak. And I say that tongue in cheek, but there's so much that can go wrong when you're talking about a game that just doesn't look like the game that you love. It can be so distracting. And in this regard, I think they at least got it right enough. If for those that want to criticize it, I think even the staunchest critics can admit that they at least got it right enough to have fans focus on the ice. And if you do that, then you, in my opinion, you did something right.
Look, I think how well sorry, Ian.
No, go ahead.
I think how well a lot of teams were playing also really helped, because there's some great hockey. Like they're. You could tell a couple teams. I'll talk about Edmonton, especially defensively, right? They look like they just weren't prepared at all. But for the most part, teams seemed sharp coming off this really long break, which, I mean, testament to the players, testament to the coaching staff to prepare the teams for these games. I mean, like, I'll even talk about the Rangers. It didn't look like they were bad. It just seemed that the Carolina was playing so good that they couldn't do anything.
Well,
it was a 3-2 game. When, you know, when the Rangers had opportunities, they looked fine. So I wouldn't, you know, even them, I wouldn't really call them a sloppy. They look well prepared. It's just, again, I think Carolina may go far. I'm maybe calling a little early after one game. I guess we'll find out in 3 hours if they keep it up for game two. But
well, and look, I trust me, I would love to take a victory lap and say at the beginning of the season, I did pick the Rangers to make the playoffs. Now, again, I did not anticipate them making it the way they did. So, you know, we have to, and that's the thing, too. I think people have to realize that despite some of these teams being in the playoffs, they're not really playoff teams. Now, again, we talked about Chicago a lot yesterday. That's a unique situation because of, you know, who they are and what they've done in the past and some of the players they still have and some of the young talent. So, yes, are they a quote-unquote playoff team? No, they're not. But in this season, in this particular year, they are. So you got to take advantage of it. But that's not the reality for every team. So like the Rangers, for example, I believe Buffalo missed the playoffs by 1 point. But had they been in there, no one would sit there and say, oh, you know, this is a legit play. No, this is not a playoff team. They're, you know, they got a long ways to go. And I think the Rangers are a team like that. So
think about Florida. How often, like, how many long stretches Florida's gone without the playoffs? I mean, I think they have the longest streak in NHL history of no playoffs. I think it lasted like 10 or 11 seasons. Yeah. And so, like, the, you know, and they've, the last couple years they've been in and out, but they consistently haven't really been a playoff team. And I mean, they get a chance. Mm-hmm. And actually, I thought that looked really good. I do have one question for both of you off the spur. And obviously, I've prepared this and I have an answer. Is there one period of hockey, you know, 120-minute period during any of the weekend that really stood out to you? Because for me, it's the third period of that Florida Islanders game. The Panthers scored a minute into that third when they were down 2-0. So that suddenly made it. It was a one-score game for most of that third period. It was really intense. And both teams had chances in the third. The momentum swung back and forth. And I thought it was just really great hockey. And both goalies were incredibly sharp. I mean, there's probably close to 60 shots in that game and only 3 goals. So I thought that third period especially was great to me. And that really stood out.
No, I'll be honest, I can't hammer down a period because, you know, what do we watch? 15 games, that's 45 periods of hockey with a couple extra in between because of the overtime, or one extra because of the overtime. So, excuse me, over the course of 2 days, that's a lot of hockey to be watched. So you have to forgive me if all these periods just kind of blend together. I'll go with what you, because I'm trying to see now. I'm trying to think specifically. I'm trying to rack my brain, but again, it's just all these games. I mean, we're getting it every day. I mean, we talk about it noon today, noon tomorrow. It's hockey all day, and it's I love the setup because, again, I hope my biggest hope is that we're gonna, as a sport, and I say we because, again, I've felt like I've been a supporter of hockey. I have my whole life, and I love the sport, and I hope that it grows. But I hope we as a sport fandom gain some more fans. We want to bring in more people. We want to make this sport more popular. And I think easily this weekend has been a fantastic display of what the sport can offer, despite the issues facing them. So so to not answer your question, I don't have a particular period. I just collectively, I thought the weekend was a tremendous success. And real quick, I was going to say something based on the whole fan thing. I feel like that was overblown a little bit. I think fans, as they do, feel like they're far more important than they really are. And they do have impact, but in reality, they have nothing to do with the talent on the ice. Like, some players maybe thrive off the fans a little bit. We've talked about Brad Marchand being a guy that could really, you know, build up off the fan. But at the end of the day, I mean, that's a recent thing that they're used to. To me, I look at this and I see these games being played in the situation that they're in, this bubble, living in these hotels, and like, I guarantee you, after getting used to just the first little bit of it, all of a sudden they're thinking about, hey, you know, when I was 15 years old, we went to Oswego, New York, and we stayed in these hotels, and we played in these tournaments. We shuttled back and forth between the buses. We had our Bauer flip-flops on and our tearaway pants because that was kind of what was in at the time, you know, little snaps on the side, and, you know, maybe we had our team jackets, and there was just this just experience that, you know, these are things that personally I remember and will remember for my entire life and cherish. And I feel like this is a unique situation for a lot of these players, because at the end of the day, whether they're 25, 30, 35, they all went through this. And there's a part of them that's all of a sudden going to be like, you know what? I remember doing that stuff. And like, I could live with that. Now, yeah, you're missing your family. There's certain situations that are a little bit different, but at the end of the day, you know what? You're focusing, you're playing hockey, and that's what they're focusing on. And that's how I look at this. So this whole idea of them playing without fans, I don't think it's going to affect them one bit, outside of maybe a few-minute adjustment. But but really, they're not sitting there going into the boards thinking, oh my God, what do the fans think? You know? They're trying to think, okay, who's crashing the net? Who's going towards the net? Can I cycle the puck? Can I get it around the corner? This, that, and the other. So to me, I feel like the whole fan thing's been overblown.
Hockey's too fast. There's too many things happening.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, we talk about professional wrestling all the time. That's a sport, and yes, it is a sport, folks. If you want to argue with that, well, whatever. You know, I can pretend like I can listen.
I don't know if we have time to get into that.
Yeah. Curling?
Vince McMahon has said it's not a sport.
But it's
Vince McMahon says it's entertainment, it's not a sport,
I tend to trust him. Is curling a sport?
Yeah. Oh, heck yeah.
Okay. So wrestling.
You're asking the wrong guy on that too.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. That's, you know, if condos were on the verge of extinction, you'd have a problem with it. Okay. But no, this professional wrestling. That's a Jurassic Park reference, by the way.
Dr. Ian Malvo.
I've always wanted to use that line, and this is somewhat relevant because, look, I mean, we can sit here and argue.
But Ian, we're not talking about a species that was extinct because of deforestation or the building of a dam. Okay. All right, folks, forget it. I'm not going to do that now.
Yeah, we only have 35 minutes. We can't fit the whole 2-hour movie into the show. To save ourselves from getting too off track, I do think it's a sport, but that's a sport that does involve the fan involvement, and they've even done an incredible job of not having fans. So again, this idea that, oh my God, not having fans, to me never bothered me, and this weekend only further emphasized that, because it was a fantastic it was just a fantastic weekend, and this is only the beginning. And part of me is absolutely frightened at the fact that this is only the beginning, and I'm already starting to lose my mind over just overwhelming amount of hockey. So you mentioned it already. Coming up at noon, Carolina, New York, game two. So best of five series. This could be one of those, okay, you're up 3-0 to none in a normal series type situation. Carolina could really put the clamps on this series. And again, the Rangers aren't good enough to come back from two games down. I don't know if they're good enough to come back from just being a game down. So Carolina wins this game. You can pretty much punch their ticket to the next round. And New York will be looking at potentially getting the top overall pick. So I think, and maybe you agree with me, Kyle and Mike, today I'm looking at Washington. I'm looking at that game. I'm looking at Washington and Tampa Bay. No Steven Stamkos, but, you know, hey, this is going to be a great matchup. Kind of like what we saw, you know, Colorado, St. Louis, you see these teams, Boston and Philadelphia. Now, it wasn't as close scoreboard-wise, but these are the best teams in each conference, and we're going to get to see them go head-to-head for at least something. Is that the game you're looking forward to the most today, or what's another one that sticks out to you? Kyle.
Well, actually, I'm really hoping to – I'm looking to see part two of what may have been the most exciting game of the weekend, just because it went to overtime. I want to see how Pittsburgh rebounds that loss, that overtime loss. Are they going to come back? And because that game was tons of momentum swings throughout. I mean, the first 10 minutes, the Penguins were on fire. Mm-hmm. That was really probably when Price played his best, was that initial 10-minute barrage. He weathered that storm. It was 0-0. And suddenly, I think Montreal got a lot of confidence out of that. And then it was... You know, Montreal scored the first goal. Pittsburgh got a pair. Montreal ties it late, and then they do get the overtime winner. And so I'm really curious to see actually how both teams will perform. How will Montreal respond to a win, right? Are they going to gain confidence from that and play much stronger? Or are they going to, oh, okay, we're up now. Are they going to play scared? I think that'll be just as key as how Pittsburgh plays. So I'm really looking forward to that game more than anything.
Yeah, I'm hoping I can stay awake for Chicago-Edmonton. But it starts 30 minutes past my bedtime, so we will see how that goes. But that's another game where it's like, okay, how does Edmonton respond? I mean, we've really beaten their defense up, not only on this show but on yesterday's show, and rightfully so. Can Chicago basically put it? That's again a situation where if Chicago goes up 2-0, I absolutely do not believe Edmonton can come back. Being down 2-0 against Chicago. Again,
their mental resolve. Sorry, Ian. Like even in through different coaching staffs, I think about the last time they were in the playoffs. I mean, they had it against Anaheim, and you know they got robbed. That was really blatant goalie interference on Kessler that should have been called. That didn't. That game went to overtime. They won, but they were still like they were up 3-1. They still had after that. They still had two more chances to put that series away, and they didn't. And it seems like that. Not getting it done that game and losing in that game five in overtime messed them up so bad. They missed the playoffs the next 2 years. Yep. That team seems like they hasn't recovered at all from that game. So I also find that funny because that situation is literally the only way Bruce Boudreau's ever made it to the third round. I had to rip on Bruce Boudreau.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Because he's not in the playoffs. We're not going to talk about him.
Exactly. Well, I mean, you mentioned him yesterday, too. So I think you kind of have a little thing against Bruce Boudreau. So.
And guess what? Minnesota got the win.
Yeah, so, they did.
Seems like that might have been a good decision.
We'll see. But hey, we got a full slate of games again. Six again today, starting in 2.5 hours. Which, I am beyond excited for this to happen again for another day, and it starts all over again tomorrow. But we haven't even mentioned Dallas and Vegas. I mean, that's another matchup that 6:30 tonight. We're gonna get to see some good hockey between the two of them because it was brought up yesterday during our full press NHL show that Vegas is a team that is kind of, I don't want to say flying under the radar, but I don't feel like they're a team that a lot of people immediately jump to when it comes to okay, who do you think's going to win? Well, of course, you know, you throw in Boston, St. Louis, which is perfectly legitimate. Options, you know, talk about Washington. They just won a cup. You know, you talk about Pittsburgh because of their history, even despite them playing in the play-in round. There's a lot of teams that pop up, Winnipeg even. But Vegas has kind of been forgotten about. So I'm going to be interested to see how they play against a really good Dallas team. And in the same sense, how does Dallas play? Because that's a team that I think a lot of us before the season saw as a potential dark horse type team in the West. You know, maybe they pull it all together. Maybe the free agent acquisitions work out for them and they take that next step. So we'll see. Before we let you go, real quick, Kyle, because we brought it up yesterday, it looks like there's somewhat good news on Mark Scheifele. You know, from what I saw, an update earlier this morning, I believe, and if it's changed, please update me. He may only miss one game, so they're thinking it's not as serious as, you know, people had maybe anticipated. So that's yeah. great news for Winnipeg. The problem is, it may be too late. Now, I mean, where it's only been one game, but they lose game two and today against Calgary, and again, that's a team that's facing a 2-0 hole, and they have to win three in a row. So we'll see. Kyle, I know we jammed in a lot of hockey talk in about 25 minutes. We'll definitely do it again later this week because, well, again, every day we got 5 or 6 games going. So thank you for joining us. Give him a follow on Twitter at Senra Says. That's right, he changed it up, so make sure that you're updating it. So yeah, let's let everyone follow you. Enjoy your hockey coverage, and we will talk to you soon. And folks, we're gonna go to a quick break. We will be back at about 5 minutes. So hang tight, stay tuned, get a drink, relax, kick your feet up. We'll be back.
Thank you, everyone.
That's right, folks. Two breaks means we get to hear this wonderful song twice coming out of the break. So, happy about that. Happy that it's Monday. Happy that we have sports back. And I'm happy that it's Tom Brady's birthday because, again, it's a day celebration. The greatest quarterback of all time. You know, we're sitting here anxiously anticipating the start of the NFL season. And I think we're going to get it. I don't think there's any doubt we're going to get the start. It's whether or not it finishes without a hitch. And we've seen in baseball, it obviously seems to be just a matter of time, I feel like, before things get paused at the very least. I know Rob Manfred said that's not going to happen, at least not right now. But, you know, it's been a mess, I feel, for baseball. For quite some time, you know, St. Louis has had a number of positive tests now. There was the issue with Jonas Cespedes where he kind of went MIA, but it turned out that he opted out of the season kind of overnight. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if other players have seen what's going on and wonder, hey, you know, is it really worth it? Does Major League Baseball really have a good plan to finish the season? And I don't think we ever thought they did at all. I mean, we keep going back to our discussions prior to all this coming together, and none of us felt like, you know, they put a lot of thought into it. Whereas, again, the NHL spent months just, you know, formulating a plan, putting in protocols and selecting hub cities and all that. So we'll see how it plays out. We did get our first coach in the NFL test positive for COVID-19, which is Doug Peterson. So that news kind of broke. According to reports, he's asymptomatic. He's feeling good, but obviously he's isolating and everything like that. That's the first instance we've seen of a coach having issues. I feel like they're not being talked about enough, considering how much attention is being put to the players' concerns, and rightfully so. But, you know, there's a lot of guys in here, you know, coaches that are, you know, in that prone age of over 65, you know, Bill Belichick being one of them, Andy Reid, Pete Carroll, all, you know, those guys are all over that age. There's obviously long hours involved where they're, you know, somewhat involved with everyone going on. So, you know, they're certainly at risk if the players are. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I do think the NFL, you know, at least has an opportunity to get things right. Whereas if they're paying attention to what's happening in baseball, and you brought it up during our break that, you know, we've seen a number of Patriots players opt out. There's more that may be on the horizon given some of the reaction that they've had towards how the NFL plans on executing this season. And so I don't know. I mean, what are we, is our confidence meter changing at all with any of this? Because I know we've been pretty much consistent in terms of we think it's going to start. We'll see if it finishes. Has that changed at all? Are we still pretty much at the same spot when it comes to that?
In terms of the NFL, I am, from what I'm hearing from the NFL, I mean, there's not a whole lot of plans to scrap anything at this point. Major League Baseball is a concern. We're hearing more and more positive tests. The St. Louis Cardinals are now decimated, as the Miami Marlins were last week. This is becoming an issue, and we did see Yoenis Cespedes and some of these players that are really voicing concern. Cespedes obviously just going MIA and saying that this is just not worth it. It's difficult, and especially for leagues like Major League Baseball. And again, the NFL has to keep tabs on this because they're not playing in a bubble city the way the NHL and the NBA are, where they can contain this and try to keep it from spreading. And these players are not coming into contact with those that could possibly transmit this disease. There's a lot right now that, to me, is still up in the air with the NFL. I still believe we're going to get football, like you said, but a coach is a tough that's a tough positive test, without any questions. And now we're seeing Matt Stafford in Detroit, who's tested positive as well. And these types of things, where now you're seeing coaches and high profile players.
I don't think he's tested positive. I think he was just he's being, and now if that's changed since the last time I saw it, please correct me. But I'm pretty sure this is just a situation where he's been in contact, so we don't know whether or not he's been positive. Is that correct, or am I wrong here?
From my estimation this morning, and I think I saw in Albert Breer's Monday Morning Quarterback column, that Stafford had tested negative on Tuesday and Wednesday. He was quarantined on Thursday, and then there was actually a positive test on Friday. So that, to me, is the latest on Matt Stafford right now. There are three scenarios that could have happened. First, it could be a false positive. We don't have confirmation on that yet, so I don't want to make it sound like he definitely did. I'm glad that you mentioned that clarification, because that needs to be put out there. That's the report right now, and that's speculative at best. But, you know, Bert is usually pretty good when it comes to getting information like this. So I don't believe that his report is erroneous. It just may mean one of three things. One, Matt could have had a false positive test, which if you test negative for 2 days and then all of a sudden it pops up on the third, it's a possibility, folks. It could be a contaminated sample. I mean, I guess that's a possibility as well. Or and I'm going to defer to my resident medical guru on this matter, Dr. Jessica Flynn of Boston Sports Journal. According to Jess, a tiny amount of viral RNA present, which could be too little to infect two true positive tests, that could indicate that the viral load has increased. So, again, the quote Tom Cruise and Hugh Goodman, I don't know what any of that means, but it sounds pretty bad. And that, to me, right there, indicates a number of different things. So when you start to see all this speculation going on, one thing I can speak to is that there's still a lot of uncertainty when it comes to this, folks. So continue to monitor, continue to keep a sharp eye as we move into the next days and coming weeks here with training camp in the NFL. If things start to escalate, things could get interesting. But there's also a false sense of security that could arise with this as well. And I was talking to another colleague of mine in the media that covers a team down south, not your guys down there, but a team in close proximity. And we were talking about how a false sense of security during training camp could lull fans into believing that everything is going to be okay. There could be an outbreak. I don't want to say an outbreak, but there could be an increase in positive testing. There could be an increase in difficulty. Once games start, you might be able to contain it during training camp because there are not going to be inter-squad practices or games or anything like that. It might allow teams to be able to contain it, but it's still possible that these, you know, types of transmissions could happen during the regular season. So I don't think we're going to know. We're not going to know fully until they take the field. So until then, jury is still out, but I think you will see football. How much of it? That's where my confidence level is kind of waning a little bit right now. I was pretty gung-ho a few weeks ago about the NFL giving us a 16-game season, or at least as close to it as we could. I'm not as confident in that anymore. I'm still more confident than not. It's still much more than 50-50 split, but each day that passes, I think it might be a little bit tough. So
we'll see. And look, I mean, going back to Matt Stafford real quick, you know, this is a guy who could potentially be another opt-out candidate, because not only obviously if he is really positive or he has had this, that's an issue, but we all know that his wife has gone through a significant battle with, I believe she had a brain tumor. So I mean, she is someone with a pre-existing condition, and we know that, you know, a lot of these decisions by these players are maybe not necessarily based on their own health, but the health of their family and significant others. I don't think we've seen any player come out and say, you know what, I'm at a physical risk, I'm doing this for myself. No, it's mostly been about their family, and I think that's, you know, I would imagine that's the reason for a lot of these players, because at the end of the day, I feel like, you know, the players, if they had no one, if they were told that, hey, you would be at no risk to anyone but yourself, they'd probably play. You know, hell, they choose to play football, and that's pretty much the stipulation that comes with it to begin with. You're at, you know, your health is at risk every time you step on the field. So it's the fact that they could potentially harm those around them. That's really, I think, sitting obviously very heavy with a lot of these players. Now, again, I'm sure, again, there's other players that do have serious health concerns that, you know, would be wise to just step away for the year. But I think, again, the majority of the motivation comes from not wanting to harm anyone around them. And Matt Stafford is another situation where, you know, they look and see, like, okay, we have a new child. His wife has had health issues. Maybe this isn't the year. And that would be a significant, I mean, we talked about Dante Hightower being a high profile opt out. This would be probably right up there in terms of level of opt out, because again, he's the quarterback that makes a lot of money that could potentially not ever play in Detroit again, or who knows. So, yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. I'll be serious. I'd be curious to see what happens in the next couple of days with him, because I feel like, you know, if this is serious, if this is a real positive, you may see him decide to say, hey, you know what, that's it. You know, I'll take the year off. I don't want to bring, you know, harm to anyone around me, whatever. And to my point, you look at David Andrews, who again, we've been speculating for weeks as someone who could be a potential opt out candidate. He's decided not to. And this is, you know, again, he's consulted with doctors and everything, you know, considering his condition. But, you know, he feels confident in the procedures and what the team is doing to prevent any sort of spread within the organization. And you know what? He feels pretty comfortable going, you know, having whatever risk involved to play football again after missing last year. So we'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, coming from a place where you talk about the New England Patriots, and I know, folks, we bring those back here a lot, but you know, you can't take the boys out of New England. We gotta stick with what works. But Matthew Slater yesterday addressed the media, and he made the decision that he's going to move forward and play. Matthew's wife is a physician, and you have to think that those conversations did come up. So for all of the doom and gloom that we like to purport a lot of times, I think we try to be as fair and balanced as possible. There are positive signs that players, teams, spouses, families are comfortable with the measures that the NFL are putting in place to try to keep these guys healthy. So ultimately, it's a personal decision. You have to come down to whether or not you believe that the reward is greater than the risk in order to take the field. If a player decides that it's not, they shouldn't be shunted. They shouldn't be, maligned for it. Very few people that I've seen on social media are doing that. There's a select, you know, group of few that have feuding brain cells, and you're not going to reach them, folks. But mostly people, I think, are taking a level-headed approach and respecting the choices of these athletes to either opt in or opt out for the season. And really, I think it should be that way regardless of any of the sports that you see. We saw guys do it in the NBA. I can't recall off the top of my head any high-profile NHLers that made the decision that they weren't going to do this, because I know that they limited roster size in the NHL, and I think they took more of a
there was a couple, but no high-profile or anything like that. But
And Major League Baseball right now is just it's. Sorry to say it, folks, it's a dumpster fire right now, and these things are starting to spiral out of control. They need to get a lid on this, and a lid quickly, or the plug needs to be pulled quickly here, because you just can't keep sustaining the way they've been going on.
I got a little bit of breaking news, Mike. I just happened to see it.
We got breaking news. That's great.
We got some breaking news here, and I want to ask you something, or I want to say something, and then I'm going to ask you a question. The XFL has a new owner. Do you know who it is? Can you guess? And without looking it up, I don't want you to go to your sources. I just want you to throw out a guess.
The XFL has a new owner.
That's right.
This is surprising breaking news because I have not seen this as of yet.
No, I'm telling you, this is hot off the presses, my friend. This happened while you were talking. I mean, thank God for your long-winded responses because this gave me a chance to get ready to break this for you. So, folks, the XFL is now partly owned by this gentleman.
If you smell what the Rock.
That's right. I hope this is coming across. People can hear this. Right? Yeah, there it is.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
For $15 million as part of a group that involves, and let me look this up. Yes, finally. And I thought this was a joke at first, but you know, let's see.
This makes a lot of sense.
Well,
it really does.
It was through a company with he's partnering with Redbird, but as far as and I'm kind of reading this as I'm trying to explain it. So if I get kind of the details of it mixed up, anyone who knows Danny Garcia knows that is his ex-wife. But I mean, talk about an amicable split because these two have worked in conjunction on a number of projects and have done incredible things together outside of obviously, you know, being married and all that years ago. But apparently they're putting $15 million into the mix and hey, you never say never. And if it's going to go from Vince McMahon, it might as well go to a guy that, you know, when you think of Vince McMahon, there's not too many. It's not too long before you think of The Rock when it comes to the success of WWE. So I thought that was pretty awesome when I came across the Twitter feed here.
I like it. I really like it. I mean, the one thing that I think society has learned, whether you're a wrestling fan, whatever you are, do not bet against Dwayne Johnson. He is somebody that will put his money and his efforts behind things that he knows can succeed. And look, it gives him a great opportunity to be able to do it. He's got football knowledge. Mm-hmm. He understands the game. He understands what it means to
He was a member of one of the great college football teams back in the day down in Miami.
Yeah, Miami Hurricane. I mean, you know, this guy understands what it is to succeed. He's a great businessman, charismatic, by all accounts. I've never seen people really have anything bad to say about Dwayne. Anybody that's worked with him, anybody that's either worked with him in the wrestling ring or in movies or in business have always had good things to say about him. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of The Rock. I'm a huge fan of Dwayne Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
So this is great. Absolutely. This is a great move. I think that, you know, if they can get this off the ground, and it looked like the XFL was starting to be run the right way. It had traction. People were actually enjoying the product that was out there on the field. And sans for a problem with the, you know, COVID-19 pandemic, I think we would have seen a lot more of it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, let's hope that that him coming behind and giving, you know, his financial backing, but giving all the wherewithal that he brings to the table, that something works out here. This was pretty cool. So,
yeah, like I said,
awesome. I'm a fan of it.
It was not what I was expecting to see pop up, but I saw it. I was like, okay, you know what? I can dig it. You know, I can dig it. You know, I feel it. I'm a big fan of The Rock too. And again, you know, we talked about Bobby Orr to start the show, ironically, being one of the nicest guy. Yeah, and by all accounts, the Rock, Dwayne Johnson, is the same type of person. I mean, he's been so much in the public eye. You'd be hard pressed to find a single person who ever said even a slightly negative thing about him. By all accounts, he's one of the good ones. So I'm a big fan of The Rock, both on off the field, on in the ring, outside of the ring, whatever. I'm all for anything The Rock does. So him buying the XFL excites me. I agree with you. I thought the XFL had something going for them, and again, you can't. Yeah, I mean, just the timing couldn't have been any worse. I mean, with everything that happened, you just can't I mean, you couldn't have anticipated something like this happening. This was not a situation where it was poorly managed. Well, I mean, again, I don't know some of the specifics, but poorly managed like the AAF was. I mean, they're, in my opinion, were kind of doomed from the beginning. This was
AAF was, was just very poorly managed, very poorly run. It wasn't like that with the XFL. I think it was more circumstances that dictated what happened with them than the
It would be impossible for them to sustain, because as we see now, I mean, back when the season first got canceled, you thought, oh, I mean, how ridiculous would it be if this affects next season? Well, I mean, you're looking at how things have played out, and you're like, well, would I still be surprised if we're in the same spot as we are 6 months from now? Kind of, but not really. So, like, but if you were to ask me 6 months ago, you say, hey, a year from now, if you would, you know, anticipate us being where we are now, then I'd be, you're silly. So, you know, it feels like the XFL was, again, you know, they would have had no opportunity to even at this point restart in time for this upcoming season, what would have been their second season. So, hey, look, I'm excited to see what happens. You know, I'd imagine it's going to be some time before things get put into motion, but no, we'll see. But it's a great way to end the day, because again, hey, we love talking wrestling, and in this case, this is wrestling and football combined. So it's quite the entertaining topic, I would say, or at least for us.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, you know, especially with you know, all of the time and energy that we expunge talking about the NFL here on FBC Radio Live, to me, this really you know, is the perfect way to end. So yeah, keep a sharp eye, folks. I think this could get interesting to see what happens with the XFL and whether or not a resurrection is you know, sooner rather than later. And again, if they're gonna have somebody take over, you know, there's a bona
might as well be the most electrifying man in all of sports entertainment.
Electrifying man in sports entertainment.
Oh, it's great. I love it. So, folks, have a great day. We're going to say goodbye. Give us a follow on Twitter at FPC Radio Live, at Full Press Radio. Check out fullpressradio.com. And, of course, follow at Full Press NHL, because there's going to be a lot of stuff going on today with all the hockey games going on. And, of course, download the app. Follow me on Twitter at IGLEN31. He's at MDABATEFPC. Folks, have a great day, and we'll see you tomorrow.